Good morning. I'd like to call the State and Technology Appropriations, convene us. Michelle, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard.
Here.
Ranking Member Goff Marcio.
Here.
Representatives Barrero.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Dugan.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
Gilombardo. Henson.
Here.
McCurdy.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson, excuse. Sabatini.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Which remind you to turn off your cell phones and communication devices. We have a very special event today. We have the first time with a new member for the State Appropriations Committee. Please welcome Daryl Campbell to our committee. Welcome, Daryl. Would you like to say a few words?
Not really, but I'm just happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to what we talk about today. So thank you for announcing me.
Thank you. And I like seeing you on the front row. It's good stuff. You won't miss anything that way. Today we will first, we're going to take up a bill by Representative Lupus, and we have some proposed committee bills, and we'll be also presenting a budget. So Representative Lupus, please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy Thursday, members, which in Tallahassee time is actually Friday. So excited to be presenting this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing it up. Members, PCS for HB 1053 is a bill related to parental leave. Just a little history. I spent a lot of time this summer looking around the country to determine what states were doing in regards to expanding access to parental leave for its citizens. And what PCS for HB 1053 does is it expands for state employees the ability to use the leave pool programs within the agencies for parental leave, which is currently not permitted. So this just expands the uses of the shared leave pools for parental leave. That is a bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any amendments? Seeing none, are there questions? Seeing none, public testimony. Do we have any appearance cards for this? 1053. Okay, no, there's no public testimony. Is there debate? Seeing none, I will simply say I know that you got a heart for children and families, and I appreciate you bringing forward this bill. Michelle, Representative Lupus, you are recognized to close on House Bill.
Wave close, Madam Chair.
Michelle, will you please call the roll?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Congratulations. Members, by your vote, will show House Bill 1053 reported favorably.
Thank you, committee. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next, I want to present PCB SAT 2201. Members, this is a proposed. Beg your pardon. And I need to pass the gavel to Chair Maggard. All right, thank you.
We will now take up from Representative Stevenson. PCB SAT 22-01 Capital Center. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Maggard. Members, this proposed committee bill amends Florida law to provide that the Department of Management Services must consult with the governor, Senate president, and the Speaker of the House prior to closing or reopening the Capitol building during a state of emergency. Second, prior to the placement of a monument on the Capitol grounds or any change in design at the Capitol complex, DMS must first consult with the governor, Cabinet, President of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House. Third, DMS must annually provide the Governor, the Senate, President, and the Speaker of the House a Capitol Center report detailing the repairs and maintenance, the capital needs, and the cost to make those repairs. This bill conforms to the House proposed General Appropriations Act, as the budget will contain appropriations for the continued repair and maintenance of our Capitol complex. Members, that is a bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any amendments? No amendments. Do we have any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative.
Just a question. I'm on the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee, and it says this bill is sponsored by our committee. I'm wondering, how do we get a bill sponsored by the committee and the committee members not know?
You're recognized.
Because I requested to bring this bill before the committee.
Okay, next. Representative Ruffmer-Saul.
Thank you, Chair. On the part of the bill where it says that you have to consult with the governor, the president of the Senate, and the speaker of the House, is there a contingency if they can't agree on whether to? Do they all have to agree? And if you can't find them, is there an issue?
The bill just says to consult, and usually they're able to come together on things.
So it doesn't require like a majority vote all to agree. Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Representative Oberdorf.
Just to go further down that line, that was my question as well, that Representative Ruffmer-Saul asked. When we're saying that we consult, I guess I'm trying to understand that if DMS deems that the building should be closed during a state of emergency, considering the governor is the head of the state and the ultimate commander associated with state of Florida, if he says, yes, okay, go ahead, I'm assuming then in a state of emergency that would override any other person in that. And I just think that we should clear up what we're talking about in the consulting and be clear in a chain of command. So to make sure that if we're in a time of emergency, that in fact there would be a clear cut, this is going to close, this is going to stay open. So if you could comment on that a little bit more, Chair Stevenson, I would sincerely appreciate that. And if we need to massage this a little bit and make sure of that chain of command, that's okay too. And if this is not associated with a state of emergency, that if this is just general maintenance and things like that, I completely understand the consult side of this. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Representative Oberdorf, and we'll be happy to speak to you as we continue through the process. I do note that we do occupy mostly fairly discrete parts of the building. In a long event like we've had recently, I think that's more of what has brought this to the surface. Usually, if there was an emergency, it would be short and things would be very clear. This is just adding to that understanding that we've learned through this long pandemic. But we'd be happy to speak to you about that. Yes, I'm sorry.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Just the discussion kind of prompted the question. Would this allow the DMS secretary to close it without concurrence of the governor? Meaning if the governor didn't want to close it, the DMS secretary could close it, or vice versa? I mean, I don't, maybe it may be just some confusion from the discussion that's gone on. Could you clarify that?
Well, thank you, Chair Fisher. I appreciate the question, because that actually is the point, is that it is not up to the DMS secretary to close the building. It is in consult with the governor. And that might involve the condition of the building and those types of things, but it's in consultation with the governor, the Senate president, and the House speaker.
Follow up.
So if the DMS secretary consults, but they don't concur, and so they disagree, and the governor says, no, I don't want to close the building, and the DMS secretary says, well, I consulted the governor, but I just disagree, could the DMS secretary, under this legislation, close the Capitol?
Well, given our organization structure, I expect he would have a fairly short career in that case.
Any more questions? Seeing none, is there any public testimony? No public testimony. We are now in debate, members. Any debate? Representative Oberdorf.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I think what I'd love to see at the as we move forward in this bill is that a clear-cut understanding of what happens when we choose to close a building. I absolutely agree that, you know, if there's a, that we need to have the consultation, but if there is a quote-unquote real emergency, there needs to be a clear-cut chain of command that says, we're doing this, everybody out, that type of thing. And I think there needs to be a distinction between what I'm seeing here as a state of emergency versus a real emergency versus other things along those lines. So I think that's where I'm confused in this. I know I have every confidence you're going to clear this up and that we will have that chain of command taken care of, but that's my trepidation. And I appreciate the time, Chair and Vice Chair, for answering these questions. So thank you so much. And I will be voting up on this bill today.
Thank you. Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Ranking Member. I am in agreement with Representative Overdorff about just more of a clear understanding of what we're looking at as far as consultation and how does that look moving forward. And so I would like to see more of a picture laid out so that when we do run into a extreme emergency such as something where we have to close down the building, that we're in that state of mind where we know what's going on and how we can relate that and get everybody out safely. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Campbell.
And Representative Fisher, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have a lot of concern over the word consultation, as I kind of brought up in my question. I think while the answer there was, and I agree with it, probably would lead to a short career for that individual. Giving a unelected person the ability to do something that would overrule the elected heads of our government give me a grave concern. And so hopefully there's some way to put some language in there where it's clear that that's not the case, even if it's only for a short amount of time. It should be for zero amount of time, in my opinion. So I'll vote for the bill today because I think the goal is not that. I think the goal is the right goal, but I just the way the wording is gives me grave concern. I think consultation doesn't equal agreement, and I'll leave my debate there.
Thank you. Any more debate? Seeing none, Representative Stevenson, you're recognized to close PCB SAT 2201.
Thank you, members. And we always have published bills and have discussion and have meetings to make sure bills get better as they go along. And I appreciate the comments that are made, but there's not an understanding. Currently, the DMS secretary has the ability to do this without consultation of the elected members. And that is the point of the bill, is to eliminate the things that you're most concerned about. It's just something that has happened so seamlessly in the past that it has not been an issue. And I think this time it's a little bit, you know, there's some clarification you get with experience and time, and this is something we would like to clear up. But we will definitely be happy to continue to consult. Representative Oberdorff, you raised some questions about the clarity. You know, we have generally seen good agreement and ability to reach consensus, and I'm happy to discuss those concerns with you as this bill progresses, and I would appreciate your favorable support.
Thank you. Now closing on the bill. Michelle, will you call the roll call on the bill, please?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes. Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you very much. By your vote, this bill is reported in favorably. I will now pass the gavel back to Chair Stevenson. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we will have House Bill 667, Department of Business and Professional Regulation. Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Good morning, Chair Stevenson, Vice Chair Maggard, and Ranking Member Goff Marcel, and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be able to present House Bill 667, which is the policy package for the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. It's going to open up a couple of sections under hotels and restaurants. It's going to specify that the license year of a lodging or food service license shall be 1 year from the date of issuance. It enables flexibility in license renewals by allowing the division to offer a 2-year license renewal instead of just one, but the one would be available as also requires all license holders provide an email address as their primary contact point, modernizes transient lodging establishment regulations by allowing the guest register to be maintained electronically. Under professions, it's going to eliminate the application deadline for statutory grandfathering of electrical contractors. It'll add licensure by endorsement options for mold and asbestos professionals. It will also amend the criteria for determining the fiscal, the financial responsibility of an asbestos contractor. And under the athletic commission, it will clarify that participants in an exhibition match are not subject to the maximum difference in weight. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair McLean. Having presented the bill, are there any amendments? Seeing none, are there any questions, members? Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, public testimony. We have Philip Sunderman, Americans for Prosperity. Philip Sunderman waves in support. Members, we're on to debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Seeing none, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive close.
Representative McLean, having closed on the bill, Michelle, will you please call the roll on House Bill 667?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff Marcel?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Fabricio? Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll find House Bill 667 reported favorably.
Thank you,
congratulations.
Chairman, members.
Next, we have from our own member, Representative Fabricio, CS for House Bill 431, Financial Institutions.
Thank you, Chair. And members, today I am pinch hitting for our colleague and brother, Webster Barnaby, who is unable to be here due to illness. So as a pinch hitter, I indulge your kindness. The executive director is here if we have any substantive questions. This is the members, House Bill 431 is the Office of Financial Regulation's package of proposed changes for this coming legislative session. It provides changes with regard to acquisition of assets, assumption of liabilities, examination reports and internal audits, approval of applications, acquisition of control of banks or trusts, requirements for a family trust company, enhancing charter capabilities. Members, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Fabricio. Are there any amendments on this bill? Seeing none, questions? Seeing no questions, we have some public testimony. Russell Weigel, Office of Financial Regulation, waves in support. Oh, and I have you twice, so would you? Okay, all right. Is there debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Fabricio, you're recognized to close.
Chair, thank you so much, and we wish our brother Webster Barnaby a quick recovery, and we look forward to seeing him again, and I ask for your support on this fine bill. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for presenting the bill. Michelle, will you please call the roll on House Bill House Bill 431.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gialombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show the bill reported favorably. Thank you. Members, you're receiving now a copy of our budget recommendations for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. I'm going to give a minute just for them to be handed out. I want to thank Speaker Sprouse for allowing me to serve as chair, and I want to thank the members of this committee for their participation and commitment to our committee. As members of the legislature, it is our responsibility to make good decisions on the use of taxpayers' dollars, and that's what I've tried to do with this budget we are announcing today. The state administration technology and total budget proposal is nearly $2.5 billion, an increase of $96.5 million, or 2% over last year's budget. Our budget is comprised of $535.8 million in general revenue and nearly $2 billion in trust funds. Funding is included for 11,354 positions. This includes 151 new positions, while reducing 26 long-term vacant positions for an overall increase of 125 positions. Now, a few major highlights of the budget. I will be moving around in the budget spreadsheet and not necessarily in page order. In the Department of Management Services, beginning on line 125, I am pleased to announce that our budget includes $135 million for cybersecurity initiatives, which will be funded through the Florida Digital Service and the Department of Management Services. Specifically, the funds will provide $50 million for enterprise cybersecurity resilience to continue the work begun this year by the Florida Digital Service to secure and protect our state's IT infrastructure. $30 million for local government technical grants. $5.4 million in federal grants to enhance cybersecurity infrastructure, $2.5 million for 8 new high-level cyber positions, and the reclassification of another 8 positions into cyber positions in the Florida Digital Service. A total of 23 positions in the Department of Management Services will now be focused solely on cybersecurity efforts. $10 million to move applications on legacy hardware at the State Data Center to a more secure environment in the cloud, thereby improving cybersecurity. $37 million will be provided to the Florida Center for Cybersecurity at the University of South Florida to coordinate with the Florida Digital Service on training of local and state staff, as well as an assessment of critical infrastructure in our state. In the area of public safety, we have provided DMS $11.9 million for the state law enforcement radio system to maintain the radio towers, $6 million for the fourth year of a 7-year plan to implement call routing for our state's 911 emergency system. This will allow 911 operators the ability to transfer calls to different regions throughout the state, improving services to our citizens. In the area of infrastructure and state facilities, we have provided $56.3 million for repair and maintenance for state buildings, including funds to continue the renovation of the Capitol building and other critical needs across the state. $50 million for the new Emergency Operations Center to be built here in Tallahassee. Last session, we provided $100 million. Due to increased cost and inflationary pressure, we have provided additional funds for this very critical facility. Total funding for the new EOC will now be $150 million. Additionally, the budget will direct DMS to review and study the older buildings in our facilities pool that can be placed into surplus. Currently, we have state employees working in buildings that are 70 to 85 years old. In the next decade, these older buildings will require millions of dollars of needed upkeep and repair. Many of our older buildings rest on prime real estate. The budget will require DMS to report back to the governor and the legislature by January 2023 on a plan to surplus older buildings and use the proceeds to construct new energy-efficient office buildings on state property. Moving on to the Department of Revenue, beginning on line 220, $16.6 million for salary market adjustments for retention and recruitment of departmental staff, $38.7 million for fiscally constrained counties, and $9.3 million for cybersecurity and technology-related funding issues. In the Department of Financial Services, beginning on line 22, we have provided $25.5 million in funding for our first responders and law enforcement officers. Specifically, $2.9 million for law enforcement, including vehicles, equipment, and training, $18.7 million in aid to local governments for fire stations and emergency facilities, $1.1 million in aid to local governments for firefighters, equipment, vessels, and trucks, $2 million for firefighter cancer research at the University of Miami, and $827,000 to provide training and equipment to local first responders that serve in the state's urban search and rescue teams. We have also included $33.8 million for the Palm Project. In the Office of Financial Regulation, beginning on line 99, $1.9 million in 17 positions to cover increased workload, $16.7 million for salary recruitment and retention. In the Department of the Lottery, beginning on line 115, the House budget funds much of the department's request. The Revenue Estimating Conference projects next year that over $2.1 billion will be generated by the lottery for education. In the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, beginning on line one, $4.3 million for the modernization of the department's licensure system, making it easier for Floridians to do business with state government. Finally, our new agency, the Florida Gaming Commission, begins on line 244. We have provided $26.8 million in 185 positions, including 15 new law enforcement officers. We wish the new agency head, Commission Chair Julie Brown, the very best in standing up this new agency. In closing, members, I want to thank you for your input and ideas on the budget. As I mentioned at the beginning, I believe we are called on to make good budget decisions and be mindful of the tax dollars. Thank you. The staff and I are happy to answer questions you may have. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does any part of this budget cover budgets for local governments?
This budget includes training for local governments. I'll go back to, you may have missed it in the talking points, but it's an ongoing training effort there's $30 million for the local government technical grants, as well as $37 million for training of local and state staff and assessment of critical infrastructure. Representative Fisher?
Follow up. And we may not be able to do that today. I know we don't vote on the budgets as we do our recommendations today, but I saw, I think it was 2 days ago, that the Miami-Dade County Commission voted to allow for IDs for illegal immigrants. And I think that local governments that do that should be ineligible to receive state funds. So I know that may not be something we can do today, but since we provide money for local governments in here, I think that's something we should look at doing in the future.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. I saw that article as well, and I saw there was some security concerns on that. Thank you for your comments. Is there anything else? All right. Next, we will move on to PCSs that will be presented by Representative G. Lombardo. Representative G. Lombardo, I see that you want to present from your seat there.
Yes, ma'am.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to present this PCB. Last year, just to kind of give some general context, we passed a cybersecurity bill that kind of laid the foundation for the Cybersecurity Council, as well as some of the initial startups for the Florida Digital Service. This year, we're working to ensure that we enhance the cybersecurity for our state and local governments. First thing, this bill prohibits the state and local governments from paying any ransom in response to ransomware incidents. The bill also enhances criminal penalties and fines for ransomware offenses committed against Florida government entities. This includes any insider threats that may be in some of the government organizations that aid some of these cyber attacks. Next, the bill creates the Local Government Cybersecurity Act, which requires local governments to report cybersecurity incidents and ransomware attacks to the state watch office and their local sheriff. They have to submit after-action reports. They will require employees to undergo cybersecurity training, which was also touched in the budget earlier, and adopt cybersecurity standards such as the NIST or comparable to ensure to safeguard their local government's data and IT resources. The bill also requires state agencies to have annual cybersecurity training for their employees. Finally, this allows the Cybersecurity Council to work with local governments to help do studies and report to the legislature as well as to the governor and Florida Digital Service on all of this data that we're bringing in through the reporting process to ensure that when we make decisions, we're making the best decisions for the state of Florida, and we're responding to what's going on in our communities when it comes to cyber attacks. And as just previously mentioned, we're allocating proposing $135 million to enhance the state and local cybersecurity. And $30 million, again, will be going to training, and $30 million for grants for local governments to help them meet this PCB. And just to note, we do separate between sizes of local governments and the timelines in which they have to meet a standard and report it up to the state. We do recognize some small cities. I met a fire chief who's also their IT director. So we want to make sure that we're cognizant of that, and we give them more time, and we also give them resources to meet that standard. And that is the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative G. Lombardo. Are there any amendments to SAT 2202 cybersecurity? Seeing none, are there questions? Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative G. Lombardo, I just had a question. If you could tell me the difference between, we talk here about that there's a requirement to report a cybersecurity incident within 48 hours and a ransomware incident within 12 hours. And I just want to make clear to local government, what is the difference, if you would, between those two events, cybersecurity as well as a ransomware? And can we define those two items so that there's no confusion as we move forward? And a local government may say that there's, you know, a cybersecurity incident, so therefore we had 48 hours versus the 12 hours of the ransomware. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So a ransomware attack is an extortion. They lock your system down and they require a key code to open that system up. And the demands that we've seen, I'll just go through a couple of demands that were Broward County Schools. The demand was $40 million. They offered to pay $500,000. Broward Health. Right now, Pembroke Pines is going through it. That's a ransomware attack where they can't get in their system. They're locked out, and the hacktivist or the terrorist organization is requesting funds for that. A cybersecurity incident is like a DOS attack, so a denial of service. So it's when somebody attacks a system and they just they shut down a program or something like that. It's a little bit different. It's a breach in your system. It's stealing data. Those are the types of things. That would be like a cybersecurity incident.
Representative Maggard, Vice Chair Maggard, beg your pardon.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for tackling such a big topic. So I do have a question you mentioned in your explanation. And I've had some comments from local municipalities about they fill in this bill, and you brought it up, that they can't pay ransomware, which is something like bothers me. So can you help explain that to me?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's so we have to ask, should we allow taxpayer dollars to finance, to be financiers of terrorist organizations to our foreign adversaries? Because a lot of times this is financing their efforts. They're in it for monetary gain. And, you know, if we continue to enable this, right, we're creating the market. We are displaying to them. I'll tell you, there's been a couple of cities that simply have voted to give their city manager an X amount of dollars to pay a ransom without even going to the council for it. Right there, that is enabling this activity. That's, you know, that's in my opinion, that is, are we going to negotiate? Are we going to allow our cities to negotiate with terrorist organizations or foreign adversaries? And most of the time, these are those organizations from Russia, China, and all those different countries. So that's kind of where I stand. So we have to, you know, there's got to be a better way. And I think that if we do this, you know, it's not, as Chair Stevenson said, it's, you know, it's not feeding the bear. So.
All right. Well, Representative Campbell, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, will the reporting be available to the public?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So you'll see there's another bill that we'll be talking about that will kind of, it's a public records exemption bill that will kind of answer that question for you.
Representative Duggan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this good bill. I guess my question is, if we are going to prohibit local governments from ransoming their data, and assuming for purposes of my question that it's critical data that they have to have of one kind or another, what resources is the state going to provide that local government to either try and break through the ransomware to get the data back for free, or fund essentially the reconstruction of that data for that local government if we are going to deny them the ability to get their data back?
Chair.
Would you like to answer that question?
That's okay. That's fine. So in the bill, it requires to meet a standard. In many standards, there are backup requirements. There are multi-factor authentication. So I think if we kind of focus on the front end, it can help prevent some of these incidents from happening. That's that first. And when you do some of those standards, you're allowing for those backups. You have the data to rebuild your database. A lot of people are concerned about, oh, well, they have our data now. Well, they always had your data, right? So they took your data, and they're going to take it. Just in the case of Broward County, they offered to pay $500,000. The hacker group didn't like it, so they released everybody's data, health data from Broward County Schools, all the teachers. So I think if we focus on that front end, then we'll be able to minimize the risk on the back. The second part is that's why we expand the role of the Cybersecurity Council as well as Florida Digital Service. We're trying to create a task force to assist the local governments, you know, our counties, and folks that need help and support when it comes to that. Because a lot of times you'll see that the city says, oh man, I'm locked up. It becomes a panic. And then they go to automatically think that they have to pay when in fact they have it backed up. They have it somewhere where, you know, that they can recover and rebuild their database. And that's where the grant, and that's where the training and all of that, I'm a military guy. Training is very important. And when you can train the clerk at the front of the desk, at the front office, not to click those buttons or not to click those links, that is volumes. That reduces your risk tremendously. So, and I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Realizing it was a while ago.
I got a sick and I joggle my memory banks. I think Chair Dugan's question answered a lot of what I was concerned about. However, we did talk about ransomware versus ransom. And some of the question was answered from Chair Dugan, but I realize there are ransoms that have, or hacking that has locked down grids and local operations as opposed to data. And they cannot access these grids or restore them without some kind of intervention, the hacker or some other great resource. I hope you'd like to answer this. how would we assist a municipality or in restoring an operation that may have been shut down?
Thank you, Representative Henson. I'm going to turn to Representative. And the reason I'm very hesitant on putting you on the spot on some questions because you part of this is never revealing your
correct
completely. So I just, you know, even we're discussing very sensitive things. So.
I agree.
And that's why I keep turning and go, do you want to take that?
Well, and I was actually, thank you, Chair. And I was actually going to say that. And you know, that's going to be up to the resources that we're providing, and that's the council, Florida Digital Service, the emergency management folks, to assist. I'm confident there are ways. So, again, I'm just going to preface that if we do a lot on the front end, you know, we work to provide resources on the front end, we will see, you know, a decrease. And kind of going back earlier to what I said, regarding, you know, don't feed the bear. If we cut off that monetary gain, there is no, I mean, the only other thing that they're going to be able to do is try to sell the data. And that is more of a risk than going to a local or a municipality and saying, I want ransom. Because they know now that it's, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to pay it. So we have to stop that, and once we stop that, I believe that we will fix a lot of our problem. So,
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jim Lombardo and I have we talk about this probably every time we get together, and so I appreciate the hard work that you've done on this bill. Does this act cover, it says local governments. Can you define which local governments are actually covered by this?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when talking with the staff yesterday, we kind of talked through it, through that piece of it. And so cities, counties, the state agencies, of course, but also the local co-ops and electric, you know, we believe that this bill covers that.
As a follow-up to that, that was one of the questions I was going to ask about is the water utilities, the electric utilities, but also the ports. Some airports are constituted, for instance, Orlando Airport's constituted as a department of the city of Orlando, whereas I think the airport in Tampa is more like a special district. Are special districts covered in that as well?
There is also a study of a critical infrastructure, which may help us with that. But please, Representative Gilberto.
Thank you, Chair. So the Cybersecurity Council is tasked to do a study on critical infrastructure and those pieces, but it's the cities and anything that's underneath the cities.
In counties?
Oh, in counties, yes, ma'am.
In counties?
Yeah.
Yep. You mentioned school districts earlier, and you mentioned Broward Health a couple times. Do school districts and Broward Health fall up under the definition that was created?
Nice.
Hold on one second. Okay. All right. So thank you. It's just counties and cities. Counties and cities, and what falls in underneath counties and cities?
I think, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
If I may, I think some of the entities we're discussing may have already taken steps, and I think this is a really, really important first step, and I really appreciate it, and I know that this bill will have other stops for consideration of the very intelligent discussion we've heard here today. So, Representative, is there any more debate? Any more debate? Let's see. Questions. Okay. Seeing no questions, public testimony. I see no public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Representative Fisher, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I want to commend Representative Jill Lombardo as our resident expert in cybersecurity. I always appreciate the conversations that we have and the great work that you're doing. I look forward to working with you in the future as this bill moves along. I think that we're making some great strides with this bill, and I urge all of my colleagues to vote up on it.
Any other debate? Oh, Representative Oberdorf, you're recognized.
Representative G. Lombardo, I just want to thank you for the work that you've done prior to coming to the Florida House and all your service, and also thank you as well for your input on this bill. I think it is a fantastic bill that has a lot of possibilities for the future associated with the state of Florida and keeping our data safe. So thank you so much for the work you've done on this, and I will be way up on this bill today. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Henson, you're recognized.
I too would like to thank you for the work you've done on this bill. You've pretty much surmised how concerned I've been about cybersecurity, cyber attacks. And how cities and municipalities are being held hostage, having to give over our taxpayer dollars because of data breaches. I hope moving forward, if we don't have a strategy or plan for grid lockouts and operations, I know you answered what you could answer, but if there is a plan, great, I'd like to hear about it. Maybe in private, if there's not a plan, that we move forward with a plan for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Seeing no other debate, I want to thank you as well. And the staff, I know that there's been a lot of hard work that went into this. A few years ago, if we talked about cybersecurity, there would not have been this kind of feedback. It just shows how timely and how important these steps are for us to take and move forward. And you are recognized to close on House Bill SAT 2202.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the feedback and the questions and the support for this bill. Staff did an amazing job. I mean, this was multiple committee staffs kind of working together on making sure that we're doing the right thing. We're not just going and setting a standard for the state, for locals and counties and state governments, but also ensuring that, you know, we bring our risk down. We do everything we can to provide the resources to ensure that, I mean, this is a real threat. And I think all of us have been touched by this at some point or another from our local governments. And I think oftentimes the digital space or the cyber domain, we don't see it. We just know our devices work when we turn them on. We have our calendars and all that. But we don't realize that those things are online personas are accessible to the world. And we don't know who's watching us. We don't know, who's being targeted. We just know that online account, that social media account, that is your digital persona, and it's accessible to the world. So this is a step, and this is, kind of part two in ensuring that we protect our digital space. So thank you, and I ask for your federal support.
Thank you. Michelle, will you please call the roll on PCB SAT 2202, cybersecurity?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Golf Marcio?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
K. Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show PCB SAT 2202 cybersecurity favorably reported. And back for another round for your cybersecurity public records bill, PCB SAT 2203. Representative G. Lombardo, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Again, this is this PCB, which it's linked to the passage of the previous PCB we just heard. It creates public records and public meeting exemptions for local governments on the Cybersecurity Act. You know, a lot of times, you know, these things are very sensitive, as we just talked about, and we want to ensure that public knowledge of software platforms, standard operating procedures, communication when attack does happen, it is exempt from any public record, and we can do allow to protect the data and protect the information that we're passing from agency to agency and ensure of that, and that is the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing none, are there questions? Representative Fisher, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the putting this bill forward. I know that there are some entities of local government that are not included in the original bill and also not included in this. While they may not have the same reporting requirements, do you think that those should be included in the public records exemptions as well as the meetings being exempted?
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that question. I do in some way. I think that's something that we got to talk through and figure out, you know, which entities. I do think that we have to look at more parts of the bill kind of without giving any, you know, too much information away. And I'll be happy to explain in more detail in person, but I think there are parts that we can always enhance these things, because our goal is with this is to ensure that we close every gap of sensitive information that could cause or could provide intelligence to an adversary to breach our system. So and I'm happy to chat with you more about it and you know, kind of go from there.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up to that, appreciate the answer there. Does this cover the critical infrastructure that supports it, or the more than just the IT pieces? Does it cover the critical infrastructure that supports it from public record exemption?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it covers IT resources, information recruiting, the standard operating procedures, technologies, processes, practices. Protects networks, computer data, data processing software, data from attack, damages, unauthorized accesses, physical and virtual security information, and any parts of any public meetings that are talking about any of these components.
Representative, pardon me. Ranking Member Goff Marcel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for all your hard work on this very important issue. My question is, with the public records exemption, will there be any kind of exception to that as far as any kind of information to the public? So would we know that a local government was hacked, but maybe not know which one it was, or that kind of things?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill authorizes the release of confidential and exempted information by local government, state agency, or the sheriff in furtherance of its duties and responsibilities, or another government entity in the further of its duties and responsibilities. So I guess to answer your question, if you know, it doesn't say anything that, you know, an announcement saying that a city was breached in the state of Florida, but it won't give any of those details of specifically of the how it was breached or any of the software programs. It'll keep all that confidential.
Does that answer your question?
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to make sure I understood you. So there would be like a general announcement, but nothing detailed.
Recognized.
It could, but I don't think, I honestly don't think that anybody would,
You're getting some support there. I apologize, I'm just a little uncomfortable with the subject.
Okay, so the only things that are exempt are anything that would facilitate the unauthorized access. So anything else would be public.
Thank you.
All right, I see no additional questions. Public testimony, we have Tara Taggart, Florida League of Cities. Tara Taggart, Florida League of Cities, waiving in support. That is the extent of public testimony. Members were in debate. Is there any debate? Seeing none, I really appreciate the wonderful questions and the answers that you've given. You are recognized to close on PCB, SAT 2203, Public Records and Public Meetings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say I hope for your favorable support on this. I think we all know it's always, as we do some of these bills and we require communication, we require do all these reporting requirements, we have to make sure that we protect those, especially from local governments, communicating to the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gilombardo, having closed on his bill. Michelle, will you call the roll on PCB SAT 2203, Public Records and Public Meetings?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcille?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Dugan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Gilombardo? Yes. Henson?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Hillebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Oberdorf? Yes, ma'am. Robinson? Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show this important bill reported favorably. This concludes our meeting agenda, and I really appreciate the engagement on this important issue by the members and the questions and the people who presented bills and all the work that's gone into them. And this was an important time to do these together so that with the budget and some of these policy bills, that things make a lot of sense. So this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Barrero moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.